This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
Boys, Boise, Idaho. Is that where Boise is?
Yeah, that is where it is.
Look at me, geography genius.
Is that your new podcast?
That's it. That's why I haven't been on Remote Ruby. I've been spinning up geography podcasts. That's it. I have nothing else I could talk about. What's that?
I don't know. It's early Monday morning we're recording, not our usual
6 a.m.
Oh my God. Yeah. Shut up. My kids aren't here, so I can cuss like that.
You can cuss like that.
Where'd you send the kids off to?
School. Beckett's at school, and then the other two started Mother's Day out twice a week. So
I did that.
I know your mom needed Mother's Day out.
Probably.
Okay. Let's dig in. Ufuk is with us. Ufuk has been on the show before. If you're in the Ruby community at all, I sure hope you know him. But if not, do you mind giving us a quick blurb, a quick intro about yourself?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me on again. My name is Ufuk Kayserlioğlu. I am the engineering manager of the Ruby infrastructure team at Shopify. And recently, near the end of last year, I joined the board of Ruby Central. And currently, I'm co-chairing RailsConf 2024 with Andy Kroll. So that's who I am. That's what I do.
Wonderful. One of my favorite things that's happened to me in programming is Andrew and I complaining about like a lack of Ruby tooling, things like that. And then you casually just sending us an email or like casually mentioning at RubyConf or RailsConf, hey, my team's worked on this, try this. Because it's just usually Andrew and I complain and we just move on with our lives. But your team's actually like doing cool stuff. And so I just love it. Some examples, Ruby LSP, Prism, all kinds of just cool stuff comes out of your team. So glad to have you on today.
Thank you. However, I should say recently that team is now a top level team inside the Ruby and Rails infrastructure team. So they're no longer under the umbrella of the Ruby infrastructure team. They're a proper team called Ruby Developer Experience. So their mandate is to think about developer experience problems, which includes typing at Shopify and also tooling around developer experience, etc. So that team is working on that. And actually, if you have more questions for that team or about the work that team is doing, I'm more than happy to get Jirsu, the manager of that team, to come on this show and you can ask him questions about what their roadmap's like.
I love that. So we'll just quickly talk about this. How many teams are there at Shopify that are around some type of Ruby or Rails, the infrastructure type things?
We have a few teams that work on language or platform infrastructure things. So we have a WASM infrastructure team, for example, because Shopify is using WASM very deeply in some of our backend infrastructure. We have Shopify functions that use WASM for sandboxed code execution, basically. So there's a team that drives WASM forward as well. But for Ruby and Rails, it's our team, the Ruby and Rails infrastructure, which is roughly composed of three teams, Rails infrastructure, Ruby infrastructure, and Ruby developer experience. And we basically solve problems that come from our workloads that need to be solved at those layers of the stack inside Rails or inside Ruby.
So cool. So cool. And now I'd like to talk about upcoming things. First of which is RailsConf, which you mentioned you are co-chair of. And we recently, a few weeks ago, chatted with Andy, who I asked to sell me on why I should go to RailsConf. But what Andy didn't have was a list of speakers, a schedule. He didn't have the bill of goods. And so I'm just kind of curious to hear how you're feeling about how that's come together.
Well, if you've been on Twitter for the last couple of weeks, you've probably seen people, including Chris here, tweet about how they're so excited to be speaking at RailsConf. And we have lots of great names in our speaker lineup. And I think we have a really solid list of talks that will be there. The program committee, in my opinion, knocked it out of the park with this program and this lineup of speakers. We really wanted this conference. I think Andy mentioned that, but I'll just say it again. We really wanted this conference to be more practical for people who are there. We heard feedback from people who've been coming to RailsConf about how RailsConf wasn't focused on Rails enough. It was turning into a really large conference with huge number of tracks and workshops happening at the same time. And there were a lot of talks about Rails. Of course, that was still going on, but maybe the focus was a little bit lost. Maybe there were like talks around Rails or around development in general or building a career, which is fine, but people wanted more talks about Rails or how to build something with Rails. So this year, we narrowed the theme to building with Rails, which includes building a career with Rails or building tools with Rails, etc. So it's a big umbrella, but we wanted the core theme to be Rails. And I think the program committee and Andy Kroll, they worked mostly on selecting speakers, selecting talks. We had to say no to a lot of great talks even. We had lots of submissions, around 210 submissions, all really great caliber. And it was hard picking the lineup of speakers and the lineup of talks from that great representation from our community. I don't know if you all had the chance to look at the program or the speaker lineup. I'm very excited to hear many of the talks that will be there and to participate in the workshop. And maybe we can talk about the Hackday a little bit as well. But in terms of speakers, I'm really happy. And also we have great keynote speakers. We can talk about them as well if you want.
I would love to talk about the keynote speakers because what I was probably most excited about is that all the keynote speakers are active members of the community.
Yeah.
And that's something that's different from the last few years. It's kind of became a thing at Ruby and RailsConf that I'd go to the first one. And then it was like, I could go back to the hotel room now and chill for a bit when it got to the end of the day. Because I didn't know them. It was hard for me to want to go sit through an hour. And that's no offense to any of them. I just didn't know these people. And so when I saw every one of them was like, I know of them. I was really excited. Once again, leading into legitimate FOMO of missing RailsConf.
I'm still hoping you can make it, but
I'm trying. Maybe this Mother's Day out will buy me some street cred. The other thing I want to say too, it wasn't just the keynotes. There were a lot of people in the speaker lineup that I just see from the community, but also that I hadn't seen give talks before. And so I was excited about that as well. I don't know. I just feel like it's a really solid lineup. So kudos to you, Andy, and everyone else involved because it is a very compelling lineup.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. And it seems like there's a good handful of people who are first-time speakers, which I'm really excited about because that's another thing that Colin got his first talk accepted, for example, and he was super duper nervous about it. And then a day later, after he sat down and did his outline, he's like, I don't feel scared about it anymore. That is an experience that a lot of people need to have. And it's a big conference. So it's a scary thing in general, but it's great to see welcoming of new speakers and just not the same stuff over and over again. I felt like somebody will have their typical talk and give the same talk every year or something. But it's nice to change it up. So it's good to see that. And I like that there's 15 talks the first day and 15 talks the last day. So there's only three tracks. So worst case, I'll miss out on two of the talks, not five or six of the talks. That's definitely been tough in the past where four of these at the same time that I would like to see. And I know I have to watch them later. And then we all get busy, of course, and don't actually make a good effort immediately when they're posted online to go watch them all, because it's a lot of time to watch hours and hours and hours of talks. It was, but that was hard to sit through in your free time. So I'm excited for it. I think looking through the schedule, every single track has talks that I want to go see. So that is very awesome. I'm looking forward to it. And thanks for giving me a first day slot so I can enjoy the rest of the conference once my talk is done.
Yes, but we'll call on you for the second day because we want you to hopefully work with people during the hack day to show people like hands-on experience on how you applied those techniques that you'll be talking about in your talk, in your real life code, and maybe work with people to solve some of the things that you wanted to solve for a long time, but didn't have time to.
So that's going to be super exciting. So if anybody doesn't know, my talk is going to be on Rails plugins and Rails engines. And as Raphael pointed out on Twitter, Rails applications are just Rails engine. It sounds, at least in the docs, Rails engines and Rail ties are like a separate thing, but actually your Rails app is a Rails engine too, just like all of the plugins are. So everything we'll be talking about is relevant to your Rails apps. You may not inject stuff dynamically into Active Record like you would in a gem, but it's all relevant stuff. So it'll be fun to talk about because the gems I've been working on, like I took over maintenance of Axis Tenant, that injects some stuff into Active Record. So it's interesting to see like when Active Record is loaded, let's go add these features to it. Override the default scope, for example, so that if you query a table without a tenant set, we can say, hey, hold on a minute. Let's make sure that we do multi-tenancy safely, things like that. And then, yeah, like the PayGem, we're working on adding Lemon Squeezy support for the backend for the new payment processor. So that could be a really good one. We could work on the hack day and build a prototype of, because I haven't gone through and fully reviewed that PR yet. So that could be a good one. We can walk through in person and go set up a brand new Rails app, add Lemon Squeezy payments to it, go test it out, find any bugs, update the documentation, whatever else. That'd be a really fun thing to do. And the Notice Gem, I think, has one pull request open. Can't remember if there are any other features to add there, but we can go implement it and see where the rough edges that you find or whatever. That's always a good one. That gives me a lot of ideas. Every time I'm like making a screencast and something seems harder than it should be, then I know I should go make a pull request or something to clean that up or add a shortcut or something here or there. So yeah, I would love to do that. Could you explain what's the format going to be like? Sure. What should people expect for that? Because that's different than in the past. We talked a little bit with Andy about this. A day of talks, a hack day, and then another day of talks. So don't just disappear the second day and think it's a free day off. It's really awesome.
Okay, let me take a step back and go back to some of the things I heard from Jason and you when you were speaking right now. So Jason said something about keynote speakers. So we heard that from the community. And we had great keynote speakers at RailsConf and RubyConf in the past as well. But people wanted more voices from our community to be doing keynotes because they were more interested, they knew them, and they wanted to hear what they had to say. So we heard that feedback from the community, and we were intentionally making sure that we had keynote speakers. Actually, a few of the keynote speakers that we have were originally CFPs. They sent normal talk proposals, but we thought that would be a great keynote topic. So we elevated those. I mean, we reached out to them and asked them if they would be interested in doing a keynote instead. And we elevated those into keynotes. So that was really great to see that they were excited about doing that. And we were excited about having those topics be keynotes. So that was indeed intentional. And that was something we heard from the community as well. Another thing is we did hear that there wasn't enough time to engage other people, or people were missing out on a lot of the talks. And I was experiencing that myself. I was missing out on a lot of the talks because I could only go to one. I could only be in one place at one time. But with four or five parallel tracks, you're by default missing on 4/5 of the conference. And yeah, it's really hard to go back home and then to remember which talks you wanted to see, but you couldn't, and then to watch their videos. And it's not exactly the same experience because you have questions, but you don't have the speaker accessible when you're watching at home. Whereas at the conference, you can go up and ask them questions at that point or afterwards. So yeah, we were again intentional about keeping it to three tracks of talks and less talks per day, more time for people to engage with each other and engage with the speakers. If you have questions, you have more time to ask them and to talk with them. Also, we wanted intentional time to be placed aside for people to work together. We didn't want people to always just sit in chairs and listen to other people tell them things, but we wanted people to work with each other and to create things. And I think this is really important for early career developers as well. For early career developers, one of the biggest accelerants is to work with people, with experienced developers who really know their trade and who really know their tools. And through working with them, through seeing them work, those early career developers learn a lot. And one of the reasons why we wanted to do something like a Hack Day is to create that opportunity for early career developers to come sit down with you, Chris, for example, and to have a meaningful contribution in the PageM or Noticed or whatever you want to work on. It could be as simple as triaging some of the issues on the bug tracker because they still get familiarity to understand what the problem that was reported was, how to work with the code base that's not familiar to them. And with you showing them around, that would be a great experience for them. But the second day isn't just Hack Day. We also have workshops during that day. So you can mix and match if you don't want to do the Hack Day for the full day. If that's like overwhelming for you, you can go to a workshop, come to the Hack Day and work on something different, etc. But we wanted to create that Hack Day intentionally for people to come together and collaborate in ways that isn't just passively listening to someone else. The first time we tried that was at RubyConf in San Diego at the end of November, and we heard great feedback about it. But the problem was, in that iteration, we tried to do the Hack Day workshop day, which we called Community Day, as the first day, which didn't work too well because the thing we missed is there is some organization that needs to be had to prepare for the Hack Day, especially maybe less so about workshops, but there wasn't enough interaction points before the conference to do that. We couldn't reach out to the attendees and ask them like, oh yeah, which Hack Day project would you like to work on? Here are the Hack Day projects that will be running. Or if you have an idea, sign up to this list, add your project as well. We didn't have opportunities to do that. So when people arrived on the first day, everyone was like, so what are we doing now? And it was a little bit messy. We got through that, but that was one of the feedbacks that we heard, that if it was on the second or the third day, that people would be more engaged and we would have the first day to signups or for people to come together and maybe have an idea of what they might want to do the next day. So that's why we're doing it on the second day. And we're hoping, like in your case, Chris, the talks that people will be giving on the first day might also trigger people or interest them to be like, oh, this page sounds like something really cool, or building a Rails plugin in general sounds really cool. Let me go and work with Chris to see what that looks like in real life, right? So it's almost like a mini workshop that follows your talk, but less stressful. You don't need to prepare as if you're giving a workshop in that sense. So yeah, that's the idea. So we have first day, 5 talks, 3 tracks, 15 talks on the first day. We open the conference with Nadia's keynote. She'll be talking about how Rails is great as a one-woman developer shop. And then we'll end the day with Irina's keynote. And she'll be talking about how Rails is a great choice for startups today. And she is coming with receipts. She's been talking to startups in Silicon Valley, and she's been hearing that they still consider Rails to be an accelerant in getting to market and getting to product market fit. And they still see Rails as being very productive. So she's going to talk about those real life examples and her learnings from that. So that's very exciting to hear, I think. Then for the second day, we'll open with John Hawthorne talking about how he approaches open source. He'll be talking about his new project, Vernier, which is about performance benchmarking. And then he'll broaden that to how he approaches open source and how he contributes to these things. And that will hopefully be a good introduction to the full day that's about workshops and Hack Day. And the last day will be another 15 talks. And we'll close the conference with, in customary form, with Aaron Patterson's closing keynote. So in a nutshell, that's the program. And that's what we're really excited about.
Monitoring, like web development and lots of other things, can be complicated. There are tons of tools and techniques, but you just want to know that your app is up and that your customers are happy. When your customers encounter a problem, you need clear, actionable intelligence, not walls of charts and reams of logs to tail. And that's why the team at Honey Badger built Honey Badger, the monitoring tool that they always wanted. a tool that's there when you need it and gets out of your way when you don't, so that you can keep shipping. Know when critical errors occur in which customers are affected. Respond instantly when your systems go down. Improve the health of your systems over time and fix problems before your customers can report them. Honey Badger is the application health monitoring tool built for you, the developer who cares about a quality product and happy customers. Start monitoring today at honeybadger.io. And best of all, Honey Badger is free for small teams and setup takes as little as 5 minutes. Once again, that's honeybadger.io.
I like the purposeful second day hack day thing, because if you're new to a conference and you don't know anybody, it's hard the first day to jump in with a whole bunch of strangers and feel comfortable and stuff. And having a whole day, mingle with people, go out to eat, have dinner with people and whatever, then always the second and third days of a conference are much friendlier or whatever, because people have like, oh, it's been 6 months or a year since the last conference we hung out at. Maybe you've never met them before. It's a great way to push those things to the second day, that hopefully everything feels more natural and it's not like a bunch of strangers showing up in a big conference hall or something. Because at that point, I know that in the past when I was new to conferences, I'd be like nervous going up to a group of strangers that are already talking about something and then jumping in and whatever. And I'd always feel like the awkward person on the side just standing there listening in or something. But that I feel like every time, the second day, after you've done that the first day, the second day feels so much more natural. So I think that'll be a good time to do the hack days and stuff in the workshops and everything, which have a lot more one-on-one sort of interactions and stuff. And yeah, if anybody has a Rails gem they would like to get advice on, how would you go build that? I would love to chat with people, not just about gems that I maintain and stuff, but if you have an idea that you would like to see and just aren't sure where to start, that would be a fun thing for me to do on the hack day with people too. So bring those ideas. I'm looking forward to it.
I want to talk a little bit about Ruby Central and how you came to be on the board of Ruby Central, because you and I talked last week. As I told you, that was very exciting for me to see someone so active in the community, but also in your day-to-day with your role at Shopify. Like, you're just very active in Ruby and Rails itself. Was excited to see someone so active join the board. How did you end up there?
Thank you. So the backstory is, closer to the end of the year last year, Ruby Central had a few board members that were about to leave, and they were on the search for new board members. And they had a public call for applications as well. But I think as they were doing their search, a few people mentioned my name. So they reached out to me and they said, would you be interested? And we had a call. And then I actually had a real interview with them as well. Well, they wanted me to fill in the application form too. So I went through the process, but they basically invited me to apply. And I was mostly interested in contributing to the open source work that Ruby Central is doing. And I think that's one of the things that people don't quite recognize about what Ruby Central does. A lot of people know Ruby Central for the conferences that they organize, which is RubyConf and RailsConf. But that's the tip of the iceberg. And I feel really bad that when I first started going to RubyConf and RailsConf, like, I didn't know what Ruby Central was and what they were doing. And I thought they just did conferences. And I was quickly educated that they were using the money they were making through these conferences to actually support all the work that they're doing, maintaining rubygems.org, the website, RubyGems, the tool, the client, and Bundler, the tool. So Ruby Central is the entity that actually tends to the Ruby Commons. In a nutshell, that's what Ruby Central does. And conferences are a part of the commons that we all get to engage with. So that's part of the commons as well. But the biggest commons is the fact that we're able to pull gems from a central repository. I think we all take that a little bit for granted. The fact that rubygems.org is there and up and running and serving billions of gems. But who's running it? Who's maintaining it? Who's paying for this service? We don't quite really ask about that too much, but that's Ruby Central. And that's, I think, the most valuable thing that Ruby Central is doing for our community. Because if I had to imagine that RubyGems.org didn't exist or Bundler didn't exist, I think my development with Ruby would be really hard, much harder than it is right now. So I'm really grateful for Ruby Central and everyone who works with Ruby Central to put those things together and to maintain the website. So that's why my main motivation for joining the board was to basically be a part of that open source work that was going on. I don't have conference organization experience. I wasn't that much interested in organizing a conference, but I had ideas about what RailsConf should be and what it could be. So when I joined the board, I found myself in a position where I was doing RailsConf, and luckily I was able to reach out to Andy and he accepted, and he brought a whole wealth of how to do conferences the right way experience. And that's been great. That's the backstory of how I joined the board and what my motivations are and why I think Ruby Central is really key and important in our community.
Yeah, I don't think enough of us, myself included, realize everything that Ruby Central does in terms of Bundler, RubyGems.org, like you mentioned. And I think it's something we could all be more aware of. So I know you said you weren't necessarily looking to organize a conference. Here you are, RailsConf 2024. Once RailsConf is over, or just even with RailsConf going on this year, what are some of the non-conference things when it's not conference season that you're looking forward to kind of working on within Ruby Central?
Okay, one of the problems with Ruby Central is it's always conference season because we do two conferences a year, about 6 months apart. So once one finishes, we need to start thinking about the other one. But thankfully, it's not always the same people. And I think I'll be giving the responsibility of doing RubyConf to someone else on the board. And I think I would like to turn my focus, like I said, to helping the open source team do their job as best as they can and making sure that there's a constant stream of funding for that work and there's a good roadmap for that work and the roadmap reflects what the community needs as well. We already have some really great sources of funding. I think this came up in your show before, but Shopify through the Ruby Shield program has given, I think, $1 million over 4 years for supply chain security work that Ruby Central is doing for RubyGems.org and the whole ecosystem. Actually, at Ruby Central, we have our first employee working for Ruby Central as the security researcher funded by AWS. So AWS is funding one person to do full-time research on security problems.
You don't hear AWS and Ruby in the same sentence too often, so that's cool.
And we also have funding from the German Sovereign Tech Fund that's funding some of the upcoming work. I mean, some of the work that's actually currently ongoing. And we've recently raised money from Alpha Omega, which is, I think, a part of the Open Supply Chain Security Foundation, to do some future-looking work as well. So what I really want to be involved in is finding those sources of revenue and making sure that funding is being used to build the things that we promised them. I know there are teams that are doing that. I'm not doing that day in, day out, but I just want to be as helpful as I can by making connections or helping the team by being there with whatever I can do for them.
I love that. At RailsConf last year in Atlanta, I think it was, it was there at the end, they mentioned supporting Ruby Central on a personal level with memberships. Is that still something Ruby Central is offering? And is that helping in any way? Is there enough people in the community kind of taking advantage of that?
There is. I don't have the numbers because I'm not really involved in the fundraising part of Ruby Central in general. We have new board members who are actively working on that part as well. Actually, at Ruby Central, we're trying to come up with a more holistic fundraising approach. So there's two competing things there, as far as I can see. Again, I'm not directly involved, but trying to raise money from individual donors and trying to raise money from companies and bigger donors. There's a bit of a tension because there's different ways you do that kind of fundraising and different things that you can give as benefits in return. We do have a steady amount of revenue coming from individual donors, which is great to see. but we also need to do more in big donor fundraising as well. And I think everything that anyone can help with is very appreciated. And it doesn't have to be by giving money. If you want to volunteer at one of our conferences, that would be great. Or we have other volunteering opportunities as well. If you want to help Ruby Central in kind or with your time, that's also very much appreciated. It doesn't have to be by giving like steady amount of money.
Sure. Are there any open source opportunities for anyone listening to maybe help contribute at a code level?
Maybe there might be some opportunities coming up.
Very cool.
I saw on, I think it was LinkedIn, Adarsh was talking about some of the funding supporting the development of organization groups on Ruby Gems. I'm super excited about that. Has that been something that was probably been talked about adding for quite some time and finally has gone over the hump to get started working on?
Indeed. The current iteration, though, just to make sure that there's no misunderstanding, the organization isn't Namespaces. So the organization support that's being built right now is for there to be organization level accounts and for them to have ownership over a bunch of gems. For example, if I think about Shopify, for example, we release a bunch of gems and currently we have a user that represents Shopify at Ruby Gems, and we push all of our gems with that user, but that doesn't scale that much. It would be great if there was a Shopify organization and it could own gems, etc. And that's the first part of the puzzle that's being built. Hopefully that turns into namespaces and organizations, etc. But that's a much bigger project and that's in the future probably.
That's cool. I've seen a bunch of projects get published and it's like DHH publishes the Rails CSS bundling gem or something, and he's the only one with access to it. So nobody else could push a fix, even if they're on the Rails core team. So it'll be super nice for that organization level. And same with our own gems. I can add Colin and Kent or whoever on our team to that, and then they can edit and release versions of libraries whenever, which is great. I think that'll make management of that stuff a lot easier. And then hopefully someday in the future, like namespaces or something could exist to help. The community's been around for so long. Well, Ruby Gems has been around for longer than Bundler, right? And then I remember in like Rails 3 or whatever, when Bundler was added as a default, we take it for granted. Something Jason was saying earlier, it just comes with Ruby. We just use Bundler. It's about as far as we really typically think about it.
That's how the experience should be.
Yeah.
The experience should be that you don't think about it. It's a good tool to use. You use it and it just doesn't create any problems for you. Indeed, that's how the experience should be. So it's working as intended.
Yes.
But I just want people to appreciate that there's a lot of work that's gone into it and that's constantly going into it to make sure that it continues to behave that way.
Even though it comes with Ruby, it is separate from Ruby, and that is two different teams. And the Ruby core team has plenty of people working on it directly and stuff, but it's important to understand Ruby Gems and Bundler is a separate thing, even though it comes with Ruby when you install it. Because, yeah, I was just thinking about the Access Tenant gem I offered to maintain because the developer spent many, many years making that and maintaining it and then moved on and is doing different things. But those projects stall and really, really stall when the version of the gem on Ruby Gems with the official name hasn't received updates for 10 years or something. That is a hard thing. And it makes it a little easier with namespaces, but I'm hoping long-term there's better methods. And it's just part of the nature of open source. But how do we resume development on this? If it needs to be under our namespace, that's fine. But having to pick a whole different name or access tenant dash exit 3 or something is always kind of a weird thing, because then you have to do different require statements or whatever to make it feel seamless to use with the original README instructions and stuff. But I'm excited for this because there has been a whole ton of improvements in Bundler over the last few years. A crazy amount. And I know there was some hard upgrades from 1.x to 2.x, but since then, it's been super fast, super reliable, I forget what they're on, 2.5 now or maybe higher. Can't remember. They've been busy and there's been a lot of good updates and they've been rolling them out very regularly. I just consistently see a new version of Bundler every month or so. And I'm very happy to see that because I know the development is active on it and they're not waiting a year or 6 months to like publish fixes and everything in one big release. It's just a constant stream of work, which is great.
Yeah, the team's been firing on all cylinders. But coming back to the point that you mentioned about gems that are no longer maintained, that's also one of the things that we're looking at Ruby Central. We're currently thinking about it, but if our role, if our mandate is to tend to the Ruby Commons, and if there are things that are useful to the community but aren't being maintained anymore, do we have the resources or the funding to maybe take on ownership for those projects and push them forward? Maybe we can also help community members to do that as well, but maybe Ruby Central can take on the role of thinking about solving these problems and then reaching out to people like you, Chris, and to see if you'd be interested in doing that full time. And maybe we can find some funding for people who might be interested to do that for things that are critical for our community. We're thinking of ways we can do that sustainably. And that's why we're not doing anything right now, because it's easy to announce something, but not to have it sustainable. If it's not sustainable, it's going to create more problems further down the line. So we're trying to be careful and plan that carefully to make sure that we can sustainably do something like that. And hopefully we'll have something to announce in the future about things like that. But like you said, organizations and things like that that are being built on the rubygems.org, the website side, is going to really greatly help with it. But we also recently shipped a feature where you can securely push gems from GitHub Actions as well. And I say securely because it uses your identity on GitHub to actually sign the push. So it's a verified thing. It uses OIDC and OAuth, whatever really complicated thing behind the scenes, but you don't need to know about that. You don't need to think about it. All you need to do is set up a proper pipeline where the pipeline pushes your gem to Ruby Gems, and it works almost like a multi-factor authenticated push. It uses a very short-lived token just for the push that we can verify is coming from the GitHub user that's supposed to be doing the push, in a nutshell. And those kinds of things actually make it easier for teams of developers to be doing gem releases, right? Where you don't push gems from someone's laptop anymore, but you can do it through shared infrastructure. So we're trying to also build things like that for the community.
That's super cool. I know I was supposed to talk with Sam about that recently, and I think I was sick or something came up, but I'm super excited for that because that is one of the pain points of maintaining a gem right now. If I'm on my phone and someone makes an important bug fix, I can merge the pull request on my phone, but I can't release it from my phone very easily. Maybe if I had an SSH client and all that nonsense set up, then I could SSH into a server or something, but that would make it just that much more automatic and help people whenever you have a bug or whatever it is, just make regular releases instead of batching things up and doing that later on. It doesn't hurt anything to push out lots of little releases. Look at your browser's version number. It is a ridiculous number of small releases. I think that'll be really cool. You don't have to worry about fiddling with your own API token and putting that in your GitHub secrets or whatever. There's some cool stuff, it looks like, that is set up there. I read through the docs and was trying to wrap my head around how it works, but I'm excited to talk with Sam about that and see how it works, because I think we're going to make a Go Rails screencast about it or something, which would be awesome, because then I can automate my own gems, which I'm excited for. So indeed,
that would be great. Actually, I would like to bring this a little bit back to RailsConf, because some team members from the RubyGems.org team will be at RailsConf. So if you have questions to them, if you want to talk through some of these things or any of the upcoming features and maybe ways in which you can help, be there, be at RailsConf and engage with the team from Ruby Central who's working on these things, and they'll be taking part in the Hack Day. So you will have a chance to work with them to build some of these features or to fix bugs or whatever they have in the pipeline. And I think that's, again, one of the most exciting things that we'll be having at RailsConf, creating the opportunity for people to do things like that, that they don't normally do in their day-to-day jobs, and to work on something different.
Andrew, do you have any more questions? You've been really chatty this morning.
I have a pinched nerve in my neck. I am in like serious pain. And every time Jason makes me laugh, my neck tweaks slightly and it brings a tear to my eye. No, I don't have any questions really. I'm not going to be able to make it to RailsConf this year, but I'm very excited for what y'all are doing. So I'm hoping everyone that wants to go is able to go. I'm very excited about the token changes because I have had for a long time a set of GitHub Actions that I've rigged together to automatically push. It used to be even more difficult because you had to turn multi-factor authentication off on your Ruby account. So
you had to make it less secure, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So I'm very excited about that just because I remember doing a lot of that a while back. I don't want to make my account less secure, but if I want to be able to publish or release from my phone, like Chris is saying, then I have to do it. So very excited about that.
I don't think people realize as well how important the security for a centralized system like that packages, because what a great target for an attacker. If they could inject themselves into a device or something, that would be so, so bad. So the security aspect of maintaining Ruby Gems and Bundler has got to be top priority, which is why you mentioned security so much in the funding and everything. Well, we've seen it happen with NPM. Some things have happened to Ruby Gems in the past too, sure, because it's such a central place for everything. It is an ideal place to attack, which is kind of scary.
Indeed. And that's why we also need teams that will work around the clock to respond to any incident. Incident means sometimes downtime, but sometimes an incident means, oh, there's a security vulnerability in XYZ gem and we need to yank it or assess what the security risk is, etc. And detecting that, like building systems that will detect that, alert people, and then they can analyze the situation and give the appropriate response, maybe yank the gem or whatever. That's also really important. And that needs to be real time because you can't do that the next day. People's systems are going to be affected in that time. So you need the team that will work around the clock. And we're able to do that. We're able to fund that right now through Ruby Central for people around the clock respond to these kinds of incidents. And I think that's a huge benefit that Ruby Central is bringing to this community, that there's a team that's thinking about these things and making sure that all of our applications are secure and stay secure and stay up.
Andrew, do you go to a real doctor or do you like got a guy?
It's the Popeyes guy, isn't it?
It's the Popeyes guy. I gotta wait.
I'll check out that neck if you do some burnouts.
It's a good deal, dude. Healthcare is not good in this country. And I get some chicken.
Well, Uvukai, I appreciate you taking time to join us. I appreciate you taking time to be a part of the Ruby Central board. And I appreciate all your work on RailsConf. Is there anything else you want to mention, talk about, place people can find you online?
Yeah, people can find me online at ufuk.dev. That's ufuk.dev. That's my personal website. I haven't updated it recently, so it doesn't include the fact that I'm on the Ruby Central board, but I'll probably do that. But they can find links to my talks and podcast appearances, what I do, etc., on that website, and links to my socials as well. The last thing I want to leave people with is I think RailsConf this year is going to be really exciting, not just the speaker lineup that we have, but the program and the intentional spaces that we're creating for people to get together. So if you're interested in taking part, please go to railsconf.org and register and come and see us there. And if you are an early career developer or new to the community and you're there for the first time, don't be like Chris. If you see me, if you recognize me, come up to me and say hi. I promise I'm friendly. I promise I will include you in whatever conversation that I'm having with whoever at that time. And I know that a lot of people in our community are like that anyway, but this is just like an open broadcast to people who'll be there for the first time. If you recognize me, come and say hi. come and say, oh, you heard me on Remote Ruby or whatever, and just introduce yourself. And I love chatting with people that I have met for the first time. And I promise I'll be very friendly with you. So that's what I want to leave people with. I think it's going to be a great conference. And I must say, we're planning some exciting things about RailsConf this year as well. If you're there in person, you'll probably get to experience those. If you're not, you might be missing out on something exciting. It's still in the works, so I can't quite share what that is, but I just want to leave that with people at the end of this episode.
Exciting. I want to throw out the same thing. Come say hi. Interrupt whatever conversation it is.
Poppycat.
That's the thing. You got to just jump in and say hi and stuff. We're all there because we share the same love for Ruby and Rails and everything. So it may feel awkward initially, but it's not. You're here because we all share the same love and enjoyment of this stuff. It's why we're listening to this podcast or whatever too. So see any of us anywhere, anytime, come up and say hi and stuff. It looks like the tickets are discounted a little bit until March 31st.
Yes. After March 31st, the prices will have a small increase. So if you're interested, try to buy your tickets before then.
Well, we may publish this as soon as we get it. So we will try and release this episode before March 31st. So hopefully people hear this will be able to snag some discounted tickets there. So looking forward to it. It feels like May is a ways off, but I know it's going to be here. It's going to feel like next week. So I better get to working on my talk and getting my slides together and everything. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's just rejuvenated my excitement for the conference. Lots of new things, lots of improvements, lots of changes and good things down the line. So yeah. Do you have any other links to rubycentral.org? Is that the site?
Rubycentral.org. You can find everything that we're working on. You can sign up to our updates as well if you're interested in what's coming up and what kind of things that Ruby Central is doing. And for RailsConf, you can go to railsconf.org and look at our schedule, our speaker lineup, and also register and buy your tickets before they get more expensive.
Do it. And Andrew, you better get going to Popeyes.
Yeah, I'm going. Jason, if you don't hear from me again today, just know it was a joy. It was a pleasure.